Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Real Talk Rangers. We have our first episode of September. That means that we're just about a month, a little more than a month away from real life NHL hockey, real Rangers hockey, meaningful games. I know the preseason comes up before that. We've got Worlds. We're going to get into Worlds a little bit. But right now, we're very excited. You know, the temperature is cooling down a little bit. It feels like fall. Drinking some pumpkin beers today, and we've got Rangers hockey coming up.
That's when you know it's fall.
Yeah, that's
when you got the pumpkin beers coming out.
Telltale sign right there. So we're recording this, unfortunately, after the USA just lost. They got killed by Team Europe.
Killed.
It wasn't really even a contest. We had high hopes going into the tournament. There were actually some analysts predicting that the U.S. were the favorites in the tournament, but clearly that was just way off, way wrong. What were your takeaways from the game today?
So I'd like to just start off. I was really excited to start Worlds. I think it's just a really great tournament. It's a little bit different than Olympic. We saw today. Olympic's all about scoring goals and whatever else. They were hitting hard today. I mean, the USA was hitting hard. Dubinsky was hitting hard. Advocator was hitting hard. Yeah. Kessler was hitting hard.
Finishing the checks all game.
I would say I was real excited and optimistic going in. And about, I don't know, halfway through the second, I was pretty much had given up on Team USA.
Yeah, it really was terrible. Big letdown.
They had, at one point, they had about seven chances to Europe's five, I think it was. I don't know who's scoring that, but I didn't see any chances.
No.
And the one goal we fake scored went off Stepan's helmet.
Correct.
So shout out to the Rangers there.
But we have to give some credit where it's due. I don't like talking about the Islanders ever, but I will give Halak down some credit. He was outstanding. And honestly, I thought Europe was going to be the worst team in the tournament. They were old. They were slow. But yeah. Turns out, and you know what? It could be a case that we're just not very good in the United States.
I want to go back to what you said about the article that I read that favored the USA. It was really interesting. They kind of related it back to the 1980 Olympic team and said how the USA in 1980 had built their team around just strictly beating Russia. And that's what the article went into. It said that Tortorella and Mike Sullivan and all the staff had built their team into just beating Canada. That was their goal. And I'd like to say I'm just real disappointed because we couldn't even beat Europe, who's probably the weakest team in the league, in the tournament.
I mean, that's what I thought pre-tournament.
I mean, the only other team I would say that's maybe weaker is Finland, but they put up a fight against us.
The defending bronze medalists of the last Olympics.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, USA, you know, we beat Canada in the scrimmage game on that first Friday. Really optimistic. Then Canada kind of trashed us on Saturday, which is kind of to be expected in a back-to-back game, I think. Especially in a scrimmage. And then Finland, we go up 3-0. They battle back to 3-2, almost tie it right at the end there.
Yep.
So we kind of had an up-and-down scrimmage season. And then you come into Saturday, you're pretty optimistic, like we said, about Europe. And then we saw what happens.
You know what, though? It does show you that you really can't take any games for granted. I mean, these are NHL players. A lot of them are known commodities. You got Char. He's been playing for forever. And you know, Gabrick looked real fast. He looked real good.
He never looked that back. He never looked that fast on the Rangers.
Every other year. Yeah.
So there's three games in the round robin, and we lose to Europe, which is not expected.
Terrible
and then
start.
Tuesday we have to go up against Canada.
Tournament favorites,
probably.
I mean, they scratched Claude Giroux.
Right. Claude Giroux can't make the Canada team, which is saying enough in itself. And then we play – who do we play on Thursday?
We've got the Czech Republic.
The Czech Republic
close out,
Thursday. So that's a decent game to probably win. But we're looking – even if we upset Canada, we're looking at 2-1 in three games, maybe make it to the next round.
Yeah, there's no lock. They do not control their own destiny, unfortunately.
And Canada's very likely to go 3-0.
Correct.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So just a quick recap on the world. So as far as the Rangers are concerned – Team North America, which is just the kind of all the young players
guns.
from the USA and Canada, is representing with JT Miller, who got hurt earlier on in the tournament. We're not really sure what his status is now. We'll find out when North America plays, I believe, tomorrow, whether he's playing or not. Team USA, as you guys know if you watched the game today, is repping Derek Stepan and McDonough, who both actually, I think, have played really well in the tournament so far. McDonough had the goal on Friday. Stepan's been playing really well. He had the header goal. Team Europe, as we also found today, has Zuccarello, who's representing Norway. He played pretty well today. He didn't have any points today, but he played well.
He might have had a secondary assist.
Okay, well.
He looked good. There were a couple plays. There was a two-on-one. He obviously just nice little dime pass over the stick. So little sauce.
Speaking of odd man. New. Speaking of odd man rushes, I mean, Team Europe had about 8 or 10 of them against us today.
Endless.
And the U.S. had one, and it didn't connect. It was Kane to Kessler. It didn't connect.
Yep.
The biggest question mark about this tournament so far, and we've talked about this earlier, our good friend Henrik Lundqvist played in a scrimmage game for Sweden, so he's representing the Rangers for Sweden, gave up 5 goals, I believe, in like 2 periods.
Yeah, he was cold. He was yanked.
He was yanked from the game. Not exactly sure what's going on there or where he stands on Team Sweden right now. I don't know.
No, I think he'll regroup a little bit. It's Team Sweden. You know, they're always good. They have a strong defense for sure. And it's Hank back there. And you know how Hank gets for competitive games. I mean, this is obviously a half full glass here. But I think that, you know, he's going to be able to rebound. We're going to have to see what happens with him moving forward, especially as we go into the actual Rangers season. Because, you know, every year you keep counting on Hank over and over, as everyone out there that's listening already knows. We put so much pressure on Henrik, the defense collapses late year, and it's just Hank standing on his head. It's the only reason we get into games. I think Antti Raanta might have to play some more this year towards the end, or you know, spread out more games throughout the year.
Which they tried to do this year.
They tried, but I still would give him a little bit more.
Well, because down the stretch we're still fighting for the playoffs, so Raanta can only play as much as he can.
True. Although it just feels like the team plays harder when Raanta's in net.
I've been saying that for years.
Yeah.
I think that when you have Lundqvist and you know he's going to be good night in and night out, for the most part, your defense gets a little sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Raanta, he's a good goalie, but he's not going to make those miraculous saves. Your defense is going to be a little tighter.
It's not
your forechecking is going to be a little harder, all that stuff.
Yep.
I think that I'm a little bit worried. I'm not a big person to worry about Lundqvist because he's been...
Derek, I've never heard you worry about the Rangers.
I'm a very negative Rangers fan, but Lundqvist is one of my guys I can always fall back on. The thing I'm worried about is that now we're stringing together pretty much half of last season and the beginning of world slash, you know, preseason slash we'll see how the beginning of the real season goes. But if he has a bad 10-15 games, there's something to worry about.
Yeah.
He's not young anymore. He seems like he's not getting any better. Has he reached his peak? Probably.
Probably.
But is he declining is the real question, or is he staying stable?
The real problem, though, is when you define his peak is probably the best goaltender in the NHL. It's just the fact that throughout the years, I mean, we've had this conversation. If you put him on the Pittsburgh Penguins and he plays on the Pens the last decade.
More of a dynasty than they already are.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they just won, taking nothing away from them. But he's outstanding, so... It's just a matter of the team in front of him. You know, they got younger this year. We'll talk about the youth movement a little bit. But I think that, you know, I think he's still got a couple of good years left in him.
And in all fairness, I'm just looking up the stats from last year. I mean, Lundqvist had a couple rough games. He still put up a 2.48 goals against, 35 wins, 920 save percentage, 4 shutouts. So,
yeah.
I mean, if that's a bad Lundqvist season, that's saying a lot.
On a Rangers team that, let's face it, was not exactly firing on all cylinders.
Especially
throughout
defense.
The year.
Especially on defense.
Yeah. I mean, the collapse of Dan Girardi last year, the writing was on the wall a little bit earlier, but last year, I mean, that's a whole other discussion that we'll get into at another point.
Yeah, we'll get into the defense at another point. I just like to say that there's zero reasons why Alain Vigneault and the coaching staff cannot rotate out Dan Girardi and have him play not every game, maybe every 2 or 3 games.
Absolutely.
I mean, he can't keep up.
At a minimum, I think you have to shield him from going against the other team's top line and against their top power play. AV was playing Girardi, I mean, it was a really questionable call. Like, I was scratching my head a lot just he would just roll him out there against Crosby. And at this point in his career,
especially in overtime,
in overtime, like at this point, I think you need to shield him and you have to play him against lesser lines.
And we have very good young defensemen that can step up and take his spot easily.
Hopefully,
Brady Shea, Dylan McElrath. Now we have Holden and Clendening and all those guys. Yep. I mean, there's four people right there that can take a spot.
Yeah.
On top of Mark Stahl also.
Also true.
Can also be taken in a spot.
Also true.
I mean, he can't put
all the blame on G there. But
right. Everyone else is pretty good. Klein's obviously one of the best defensemen we have.
Klein's great.
Night in and night out. McDonough's. Yep. Brady Shea showed us for three games that he can be an NHL defenseman easily.
Best New York Ranger in our horrendous five-game loss to the Penguins, in my opinion.
The defense we'll talk about at length at another podcast. But that's just a brief summary of the defense. So with the update in Worlds, there's more to come on Worlds as the games progress the next week or two. I'd like to talk about the season because it's right around the corner.
We should talk about the season. It's coming.
You know, Traverse City. I don't know if you want to talk about Traverse City with Jimmy Vesey, which was our first podcast. Big news on him.
The Jimmy Vesey story that, you know, we first talked about. I think if Ranger fans have watched the highlights of the first two games in Traverse City, I think it's pretty apparent that Jimmy Vesey clearly is the NHL body. He's got the NHL skills. His goal in the first game for the team, he made a nice little pass back to the blue line, circled around, brought his defender around to the outside, cut back in, got stationary in front of the net. Nice little deflection goal. He's putting himself in the right positions. I think that's what he needs to continue to do to meet his stat predictions that we predicted in our first pod. So if you haven't heard of those, you know, definitely catch up. And I really like the outlook on VC. I think if you put him in the right spot with the right teammates, line mates, I think he's going to be very good, very good this year.
And we'll talk about the lower lines where he'll probably end up in the future, but most likely he's going to end up with Hayes.
They
know each other really well.
Both of our line projections, we have VC with Hayes.
I certainly do, yeah.
Yes, I do as well.
So we'll talk about that. The first thing I want to talk about is really the first line, which I think is probably the easiest line out there. We haven't compared our lines yet, but I'm pretty sure this one will be the same.
This is the first time that we're seeing each other's projections for the top line.
So just roll with yours, and I'll tell you mine.
Okay. On the first wing, I have Rick Nash, number 61.
Superstar Rick Nash.
Superstar right. Rick. Looking okay. for a bounce back, as is generally the case.
I mean, if he's like Gabrick, maybe every other year, he'll put up 40 this year, right?
Yeah.
We can hope.
In the middle, we've got number 21, Derek Stepan.
Derek Stepan, Team USA.
You as well.
Okay. Same. Okay.
Maybe he had some goals that might count.
Yeah, maybe.
And I've got Matt Zuccarello. Same. There we go.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that will be the opening day lineup. They played a lot together last year. They were really, really smooth on the ice. You know, Nash, we talk about this every podcast, I feel, because it's a hot topic. Nash last year, 15 goals, not what Rick Nash should be putting up.
Not at all.
21 assists, 36 points. That's your top forward.
Listen, they were, you know, you could say he was slowed by some injuries, but that's not what you're looking for out of a guy making $7.8 million a year. It's just not. He needs to produce more. I do think he's still a very, very important player on the team. I mean, just given the circumstances of how much money's being paid, you know, his skill set, what is expected out of him, I think he needs to be better. Has to be better this year.
I think one thing to note, too, as much as people rag on Nash, I mean, and this was thanks to Team Canada at the Olympics in Sochi, he became a very, very good penalty killer. And listen, I'm the first person to tell everyone Rick Nash should never be considered our number one penalty killer. He should be considered a number one goal scorer. But if he can contribute on the penalty kill and produce,
he's a good killer.
I mean, I'll take it. I mean, last year he didn't have any shorthanded goals, and actually the only person on our team that did have shorthanded goals was Stepan with three.
Mm-hmm.
But
we also had a terrible penalty kill last year. The penalty kill should be better. We've brought in some guys, Grabner, Gerby. We'll talk about the lower lines later.
Yeah.
But I feel the need to mention the story, the article that broke, the quote of Matt Zuccarello talking about the loss of his two best friends.
This was really sad.
And this
actually
was very sad as a Rangers fan. Zuc is a fan favorite. You know, he gives everything he has on the ice every single night. And, you know, the last couple off seasons, first they traded away Carl Hagelin, and then they got rid of Derek Brassard in the trade for Nicky Zibanejad. And those were Zuccarello's two best friends. you know, he said that he understands it as a business move, which you have to, of course, just getting younger, clearing the cap space. But at the same time, you know, as a human being, is what he said, to lose his two best friends, that's got to hurt. I mean, that's really got to hurt. They've been playing together for years. They've obviously, you know, gelled off the ice. They were in his hospital room when he took the puck off the skull a couple of years ago.
And you really wonder how –
it's tough.
It's going to affect him mentally, but you really wonder how it affects him on the ice, if at all. I mean, in theory, it really shouldn't affect him on the ice, but when you play with somebody for so long and you're such good friends with somebody, you just have that natural connection. Just what we're talking about with VC and Hayes, they have that connection. Mm-hmm. Now, you're possibly going to play Zuccarello at some point with Zibanejad. They've never played together. I mean, Zibanejad's never played with anybody, so we'll see how that works out in the preseason. The other thing I want to point out with Nash really quickly before we move on to Stepan. So Nash, I found him last year a lot of times, and I don't know if you agree with me or not. Everyone would say he's just got to take more shots, get more opportunities, right?
Yeah.
But he's taking shots from terrible places to score goals.
Oh,
taking shots
borderline blue line.
Yeah. Right, blue line, above the circles, just terrible weak shots, low at the pads of goalies. So his shot percentage last year was one of the lowest on the team. At 8.2%.
Ooh.
Right.
That's a tough stat
to
take in.
So he's taken tons of shots, but not scoring any goals.
Right.
So you got to decide, do you want Nash to take a million shots in bad opportunities where the defending team can go the opposite way? Or do you want him to actually get good opportunities and try to grind low in the net? Rick Nash has the body of a power forward, but does not use his body as a power forward.
Yep, something that we've been frustrated about for years.
I mean, if Rick Nash could play like a Ryan Kessler or Milan Lucic and drive the net and score
uses
goals.
Physical tools. He's a big, powerful forward frame.
And I'm not talking his stupid turnaround thing.
I was hoping you'd bring that up.
Going in. I mean, the only person I've ever seen do that successfully is Jaromir Jagr.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, Rick Nash is every time he turns around and tries to body somebody as he's driving into the net, he loses the puck instantly.
Yeah.
So, again, Nash is one of those players. I mean, you hope he can somehow put up 30. And get back to 2 years ago when, I mean...
The fact that we're hoping for 30 is concerning in itself. But, hey, we're used to it already. It should be a lock for 30 goals, given just his speed and his physical tools. But, so now that we've agreed on the first line, all three players, the same projection. Last year, Matt Zuccarello led the New York Rangers. He had 26 goals and 35 assists for 61 points.
Which I didn't know.
Which I didn't. I didn't remember that. Yeah, and it should have been a higher number of points. But I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you very quickly.
I'm probably not going to know the answer.
Okay, so who is going to lead the New York Rangers in scoring this year? And have we already mentioned his name?
In points or goals?
In both.
In both.
Points. We'll go points.
Wow, that's hard.
Not easy, right? Because there's no pure point producer.
I mean, we've talked about this. No one sticks out with great seasons. I mean, I think it really highly depends on Nash. I mean, you would go Zuccarello if you think that Nash can have a decent season. Because he's also playing a Stepan. So it's Stepan, Zuccarello, and an iffy Nash.
Yep.
But I will say, and this is kind of courageous, with the lines that I project, which we'll get into the second line, I think Mika Zibanejad could be the Rangers' best player next year.
Best point producer?
Yes.
Wow.
Not so defensively, but best point producer.
Okay.
I'll just say really quickly, we'll go into our next podcast, we'll have the second line, but I have Zibanejad playing with Kreider and Miller on my second line.
We have the exact same lines.
Right.
Second line.
And again, we didn't discuss these before, so hopefully they're right. But if Zibanejad plays with Kreider and Miller and the potential on that line.
Oh, yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Love
the line.
Love the combination. I think they work perfectly together. I think it's a good spot for all three to reach their potential.
I mean, Zibanejad, if you've watched any of his film, is one of the best passers I've seen in a long time. If you watch the power play of the Ottawa Senators, I mean, he runs the power play. He's kind of like the Nicholas Backstrom of the Capitals.
Yeah.
Everything on the power play goes through Zibanejad. It's basically Zibanejad to Carlson, to Hoffman, to Carlson, to Zibanejad. That's everything goes through Zibanejad.
And there's a lot of movement on those plays. If you watch the actual highlights from the power plays last year,
and
he's moving, he's skating, he's passing, he's cutting,
and you know, everything
he's active,
we
active player.
Everything we just said is exactly the opposite of what the Rangers power play does. The Rangers power play stands still. doesn't take shots.
Stationary.
Passes everything, doesn't shoot.
Nobody's near the net.
No one's in front
of the net. Why would you cut to the net?
No one's ever been in front of the net.
Who would send Rick Nash to the net? Why would that be a good idea?
Who would send Chris Kreider to the front of the net? Because he's 6'3 and 240
pounds.
Another
head scratcher, right?
So, I mean, I think Zibanejad also is going to pretty much... I mean, in my opinion, he's basically the leader of the power play, even though he's never been on a Rangers power play in his life. Nobody else on this team is a power play mastermind.
I think, given the makeup of the team, I think he's the guy. I think they envisioned that for him, too. They gave up Derek Brassard, who was their top goal scorer last year. What, 27? And, you know, somebody's going to have to fill that void as the guy that moves the puck and the main focal point of the power play. And I really do agree with you. I expect it to be Zibanejad.
And Brassard.
I think he could do it, too.
Brassard was the top power play point earner on the team also.
That makes sense.
So, I mean, the Zibanejad trade was phenomenal. I think everyone at first was a little bit shocked and then sort of realized, okay, we basically got a younger, cheaper Brassard in Zibanejad.
Exactly.
And I think that.
And a second round pick to boot.
Right. And a second round pick, which don't forget, everyone complains about Rangers not having picks.
I really can't remember the last time the Rangers traded for a high draft pick. Traded four.
I can't remember the last time the Rangers had a high draft pick, period.
Ever.
Not even traded for it. Just had one.
Yeah. I think it might have been Shea like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, who's your top scorer? I mean, for me, it's Zibanejad or Zuccarello. I know you love Stepan, so you're going to – I know you're going to say Stepan.
I do like Stepan, you know.
And he's had a good world, too.
He's had a good world.
He's got a good start.
You know, he's still young. I think with the right combination and you get him power play time, I think he could put up a lot of points. But I'm going to go Rick Nash.
I can't even believe that right now.
I'm going to say that Rick Nash has the bounce back.
How?
I think – and it's all contingent on health. I mean, you can't say this stuff without thinking about health. But I think that Rick Nash – I think he's in a position to succeed. I think he's going to be obviously getting all the minutes, top line minutes. And now that I want Vigneault to pair him with Zuccarello for the long run. I don't want any three game stints where they're shuffling lines because they had a couple bad shifts. I think to have the chemistry build up and you have to have it become consistent so whether they know where each other are on the ice. And I think Zuccarello's vision and Stepan's vision, he's an underrated passer. He's a pretty good passer.
Zuccarello in the Europe game today, he made some cross-ice passes on the power play that were unbelievable.
Some dimes.
Unbelievable.
Dimes. So I think if Nash actually uses his skill set, I know the track record doesn't point in this direction, but I think that they're going to have to figure out at some point that he has to get in front of the net and shoot the puck, and I think Zuccarello, all year playing with Nash, would be able to put it right on his stick.
But here's my question is that I almost question if having Zuccarello play with Nash, which we've both projected, and I'm almost positive will be the top line come opening day. I mean, I almost wonder if having Zuccarello there is almost wasting his potential. Because last year, what you saw night in and night out with Nash is typical, like hockey term, gripping the stick too hard. You could give Rick Nash a perfect pass, cross ice, half the net open, he's gripping the stick too hard, he's either missing high, fanning on the puck. The dude has no confidence.
Last year, that was the case.
He has no confidence right now. Well, I don't know right now because he hasn't played, but from last year. From last year.
Yeah, he wasn't great last year. I thought he actually played decently in the playoffs. I mean, that's not saying a whole lot compared to the rest of the team.
And just really quickly, I think I'm almost positive on the last podcast, we talked about who you'd want the puck on the stick.
Yep.
And
last
shot of the game. And you said Rick Nash. I just cannot.
I'm a little shocked to find myself back on the Rick Nash bandwagon, he's in for a bounce back.
I'm pretty sure I had said Zuccarello, and I can't believe that you're still on this Rick Nash.
I am.
Horse.
I think he's going to regress to the mean this year, and I think he's gonna find the back of the net. All it takes for a guy like Rick Nash is a couple games, couple goals, and the guy can get hot. We've seen it. 2 years ago, he was incredible, scored 40-plus goals. I think it's possible. I mean, you look at the rest of the team, and I think that it's a good young youth movement, and I'm feeling positive. I'm feeling positive. But then again, I had the same thought and the same initial feelings about this Team USA before this game.
I've got two things on that. I agree with part of your statement. I do believe he'll get hot, but I do believe he'll get hot for two or three games. And then you know what happens after that? Take a guess.
He disappears.
He disappears for how many months? 2 or 3 months. And then it gets hot for 2 games. And then another 2-3 weeks, 2-3 months.
We agree to disagree on that.
I will see. I hope
you're being more of the realist, and I'm trying to look optimistically here. But I mean, I feel like Rick Nash will be better this year.
I really hope you prove me wrong. I really do.
I hope I'm right there.
Listen, I'm a big fantasy hockey guy, and I've discussed this with a few of my friends in the fantasy hockey leagues. Rick Nash will not be drafted on any of my fantasy teams. I don't care what round it is.
He's too big of a risk. I would take him later than he's probably going on the average.
But I wouldn't even chance it late. Dude, well, he had what did we say, 15 goals? He had 15 goals last year.
Yep. But his value will be down. He'll be drafted later on average.
But I'm not sure. I don't know.
At least way later than he was the year after coming off a 42-goal season.
True. That's true. That's very true.
But we'll have to see with fantasy.
Yeah.
Whole different world.
Yeah, we're probably gonna do a podcast on fantasy. We have a fantasy hockey expert.
We do. We'll be introducing him in our next pod.
He'll be coming in eventually.
Look forward to that.
Yeah.
That about does it. Top two lines out there. Early reactions to the World's Championship, the World Cup of Hockey. But hopefully things get better for the U.S.
And if things don't get better, we're going to be rooting for North America.
Oh, yeah.
You got it.
Oh, they're so fun.
The young guys so to watch, it's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
That's about it.
That's about it. This little town up to you.